Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you're with us. Welcome to Los Angeles. We're at the Dream Center, an amazing place. You're going to find out all about it. I'm with Matthew and Caroline Barnett today, and it's mind-boggling what we're experiencing at this place. So you're going to want to stay tuned. Good Life from the Dream Center, coming up next.
Hey, Dean, how are you?
Great, Matthew Barnett. Yeah. We're at the Dream Center here in the spectacular view of the great city of Angels. I grew up in Los Angeles area. I love L.A., but I say that sometimes people go, man.
Thank you.
I love L.A., just like the song. And I know you do, too. This guy has put in 30 years at this place. We're on top of the rooftop here, on top of the 15th floor of the Dream Center. And what's happened in this place over the course of the last many decades is truly mind-boggling. So you're going to hear all about it, but I'm happy to be here. I'm grateful for what you've done. This labor of love.
Yeah, you know, you just walked on this rooftop and you're just so full of joy because I think you understand how important it is that something good comes out of LA, you know, and this hospital here, this is 400,000 square feet. We bought it in 1996 on pure faith from the Catholic Church. It sold it to us for $3.9 million. They could have sold it for $16 million to movie sets and all that. But I was only 22 years of age. I saw the building. I called my dad. I said, there's a big old hospital that's available. And, you know, I never believed that. Here we are. I've been in the city pastoring for 30 years that we would be at this place. And to see hundreds of people live in this building every day, nearly 600 to 700 whose lives are being transformed. This whole tower that you're standing on about is 15 floors below us of drug and alcohol rehab. So we have 210 people who every day free of charge live here for 1 year free. And the reason why everything is based on 1 year is people do better when they have a chance to really take time and get out of that desperation mindset and just know that your food's gonna be taken care of, meals gonna be taken care of, your room and board and everything. And so it gives people a chance. And recovery alone, about 70 over there in that building, the emancipated minors. And then this whole side wing that's kind of hard to see over here, but this whole side wing is homeless families. So we have 40 families that live here, 200 people that are homeless that, again, everything's a year. And the concept is to really give them a chance to really rebuild successfully.
Yeah.
Through counseling and all the things they're going through. You know, we call it the luxury of time at the Dream Center. Because when people have time, they make better decisions than getting out of that two-week hustle type of lifestyle.
Right.
I think that's one of the beauty of the Dream Center. It's, you know, we have veterans that live in our building as well. Homeless veterans, an entire floor. That brown house over there in the corner, that's for women homeless veterans who live there. Got a basketball gym and fitness center for the neighborhood where kids for $5 a month can lift weights, play basketball. So it's really, you know, putting deep roots into the city and just earning the right to be heard by outlasting everything, you know, outlasting the liquor stores, outlasting the pimps and outlasting the gangs. And so that's kind of our belief system, the Dream Center, is whoever stays the longest will win the battle of influence. And so in a little bit, this cafeteria will be filled with hundreds of people, 1,200 hot meals a day are being fed to anybody who just wants to come and get food in the cafeteria. Food trucks that are getting ready to go out, actually they're out now, four of them are, in the morning shift, and they just give grocery bags of USDA food, and then of course grocery stores and other things that contribute. And every time that truck opens up, 150 families are getting groceries for the week, times 40 sites. But you know, been here for 30 years, we've taken on one program at a time, done it well, moved to the next, and just kept trying to find a need and fill it, and find a hurt and heal it. And that's kind of been this thing. And so this, you know, it's one of those kind of miracles that happens every day. You know, not government funded. We only have maybe one grant that we get. It just allows us to be who we are. And that's people that believe that a relationship with God is powerful and seeing lives transformed. And so we just seeing God do miracles through ordinary people who love this place as much as we do.
Outlast everything. What a great idea.
And that's really, you know, this building doesn't get tagged with graffiti. Gang members respect it. because, you know, we feed their moms every single week. Right. We feed their families. Right. And so that's one of the great things about, I think, what's happened here is that longevity speaks so well to people. When I first came here, people said to me, man, you're never going to make it. And they were right, because so many things have come and gone. And the only way to really prove that you're going to make an investment is to stay.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the pandemic happened and people were offering us $160 million for this building, it's one of the most coveted. You know, we said no. And one of the reasons why is when God calls you something, it can get tough. But, you know, the call keeps you and the burden leaves. And there's times where the burden comes and goes, but the call of God will keep you here through longevity. Yeah. Well, we have our whole women's shelter in the side wing here for women who are dealing with domestic violence and human trafficking emergency shelter. So when the police find girls, they'll give us a call and say, can you temporarily house them while we try to work through the issues that they're going through as well. So it's just, we kind of believe that man's need is God's call for the day. You know, we had the rain shelter last week that opened up to get 110 people in 24 hours. So with a great group of people like college kids who come to serve here as well, we just have an army that can move fast.
Yeah.
So we're structured, we have programs that are very detailed, but yet at the same time, it gives us a spontaneity to just respond to emergency or disasters in the city. But well, I want to take you on the floor where the guys live in the program. It's a one-year recovery program.
Yeah.
And I want to show you where they live and some of the guys that are in the program. I think you'll enjoy meeting them.
Let's go.
And see what's happening in their lives.
Let's go. Let's see you.
So, Dean, this is some of the men in our one-year program. This is where they live. These are the bunks. This is like the generals of the kingdom of God, man. This one-year program, you see all the badges, different levels people are at, and we're just so proud of all the amazing stories of transformation, like Hector.
Well, my name is Hector. I'm 25 years old. I grew up in the USC area and never really into gangbanging, but playing basketball and just being laid out at NIU, catching some influences and whatnot.
Yeah.
Started getting into alcohol, pills, smoked weed right after. And next thing I know, rainfall and just not doing too good. I came here when I was 20, turned 21 in the program. I was pretty upset at the time and I was very ignorant. And I made an emotional based decision to just leave my first time around, a week away from level four. And out there, the peace that I had in here, me knowing that I was going to be good in here, just destroying confidence, just destroying bonds that I had with my mom, my sister, them seeing how I had improved through the program, just led me to come here at 25. So now I'm here, and by the grace of God, I still got a relationship with my mom, my sister. I feel healthier than ever. Not just that, I've been learning trials and tribulations are always just lessons to learn from, and you can make the most of it. Yeah, just thank God for Dream Center, and thank the man right there.
Thank you, man.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Come on, Hector. Give a round of applause.
Yeah, my name is Berlin Perez. I'm 30 years old, born and raised here in Southern California, Los Angeles area. What brought me over here was back, I had a 21-year struggle with suicide and depression. My last attempt was at 2020. That's the laceration of the scars that I have on both of my arms. But since coming over here, you know, I've accepted God into my life. There has been a lot of miracles that have happened. Relationships between, you know, me and my family have been restored. I no longer feel that I have to be punishing myself for everything that I have done, for everything that, you know, my depression and, you know, and anger and everything that was inside of me, you know. I no longer lash out at myself. I find myself, you know, amongst a great group of men over here who have, you know, all each and every one of them have helped me, you know, push through. I'm one of the four graduates who are gonna be coming up in March. And of course, my brothers, Andres, Andrew Jackson, and Giles are also gonna be graduating alongside with us. And so, you know, if it wasn't for this program, I would not be here. I would most likely be, I wouldn't be here, you know. And I'm very thankful each and every day to Pastor Matthew for his vision, for everything, you know, that, you know, he has done for us, for providing a safe environment for us, you know, to, you know, face those challenges that and tribulations that, you know, we weren't able to face. And, you know, I'm just so thankful for everything that he's done for us.
Yeah, thank you, Pastor. Awesome. Thank you. Dean came all the way up here from Santa Barbara, and they have an unbelievable organization that just helps people, a great foundation, and just walking up here, I just knew that I had a friend immediately, and he just drove up to Santa Barbara just to meet people and just give the vision of the Dream Center people around that area as well. And Dean, do you have anything you want to share with the guys, or anything maybe God's put in your heart, lesson?
Yeah, I'll share something.
Sure.
So I want to tell you guys, so 14 years ago, I went to treatment for alcohol.
Wow.
And I was a broken, really, really broken guy. And God met me there with his mercy, probably something that you guys can relate to. And it was life-changing. And from that point on, my life's gotten a lot better. And I'm free from alcohol, which is a really good feeling, as you guys mm-hmm. probably can relate to. So the devil is very crafty in terms of wanting to steal and kill and destroy, especially good men like you. Mm-hmm. But God's bigger and God's more powerful, and when we follow him, you know, it could be an amazing experience of freedom. So mm-hmm. I just encourage you to keep going. I've been to a similar place, and man, is God good. So congratulations on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're obviously men of great courage and strength to be here. So I admire you a lot. Oh. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you. Your heart is restoration and comebacks, and
yeah.
your whole foundation, good life is about, is meet people at rock bottom and pull them up and see great things happen. And so, yeah.
My name is Cassandra Plazola. I grew up in Moreno Valley, California. I'm 28 years old. I've been here for 11 months already. Growing up, my parents were amazing providers, but they worked a lot, so it kind of made me and my siblings kind of like an easy target for people to take advantage of us. So me and a few of my sisters were molested. I was molested from the ages of 4 and 7. And then at 12, I was raped. And then that's kind of where my rebellious side started to come out. I started to run the streets, hang around with the wrong crowd. I found, you know, love in the gangster life, in the drugs, money, guns, and kind of like landed me into experimenting with first with marijuana, and then quickly, rapidly went to cocaine, alcohol, opiates, like anything I can get my hands on. And at 14, I did get pregnant with my first child, and she kind of calmed me down for, I want to say, like 2 years. And then I kind of went back to the drugs. From there, I experimented from, again, marijuana, cocaine, anything I can get my hands on, really. Before I got to the Dream Center, I was homeless. I have 5 kids. I was homeless, in and out of hotels with them, doing drugs. Luckily, my mom acted quick and took my kids from me before CPS could, because CPS was already involved. So she took my kids and told me, you know, I needed to get my life together. And they told me about the Dream Center, but I fought it. And I said, no, I can get clean on my own. And that didn't work. Since being here, though, they forcefully brought me here. I didn't, I still was like fighting it, coming in on the 7th floor. I was like, no, I don't need it. And I came here to get sober, and I am leaving with a relationship with God. And if one thing I didn't know back then was I didn't just need to be sober, I needed God in my life. And I've been able to better my relationship with my mom. My mom is just so proud of me. She looks at me and I see like this like twinkle in her eye when she just stares at me. My kids are able to come see me every weekend. I'm gonna do second year, and luckily, like, this program, it's not just like, okay, once you're done with first year, they just throw you out. They are allowing me to live here with my kids. I'm going to school to get my GED. I've been sober for 11 months. That's the longest I've ever been sober. And yeah. And I came here to get sober, and God has given me a vision, and He wants my testimony to be shared so that, you know, I can help other women that are going through the same things that I went through, you know, like, just because you go through things, just because you're exposed to things, doesn't mean that there's not a chance for people like me. Like, there is a chance, and Jesus has really showed me that He loves me, and that's the best kind of love. Like, I've looked for love in the wrong places, and I can't wait to see what He has in store.
Aww. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Aya.
Hi,
nice to meet you. I was born in Macon, Georgia, and I was raised in a dysfunctional family. My mother is a veteran, an Army veteran, four generation Army family. And my father is an entrepreneur. Growing up, when I was first born, I was born in a cult. I lived on a compound, and that was my first experience with a spiritual system, with any just way of life. And at four, I moved here to California. And since the age of four, I've just been living bi-coastal, never had stability, never really had a foundation. Through those challenges, I did what the world told me to do. I went to college, I got a job, I did everything that I felt would fulfill me, and none of that worked. And so I became, you know, a cynic. You know, I wanted to just withdraw from the world because I had been so broken and battered and abused and oppressed, and I just needed to find an out, a refuge. And thankfully, I found Jesus. And no. Thankfully, Jesus led me to the Dream Center. And since I've been here, I've just been growing in my faith and just growing in, you know, what I know Jesus has for me. You know, the Bible is the story of, you know, history. It is His story. You know, it's our story. So I'm just so grateful to be here to, you know, have camaraderie and fellowship and a great leader. Amazing. And I'm just glad and just happy to see all that God has in store for me.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Such a privilege to see all that. And now we're joined by not only Matthew, but his wonderful wife, Caroline. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
25 years of marriage.
Yes.
And two kids, Mia and Kaden, 2018. And we were just talking about Mia's quite an athlete, so that's fantastic. So where'd you meet?
So back in 1996, it was my senior year of high school, and I was raised in the church, but during my junior and senior year of high school, I was living with one foot in the world, one foot in church. Mm-hmm. But at the end of my senior year of high school, I thought, okay, what am I going to do with my life? And I got radically on fire for Jesus. And as I was reading the words of Jesus, I thought, I want to do what He was out doing, reaching out to those who thought they were beyond salvation, those who thought they had gone too far. And so I had all of this passion and no outlet for it. And so then at that point, we heard from some pastors in Norway of this new place in LA called the Dream Center. So I came, and the moment I stepped on the campus, I thought, this is it. This is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. So as soon as I turned 18, I moved in as a missionary volunteer back then. And what's funny is how we actually met then. It was my second time attending church. And at that time, we were holding our services in the basketball gym. And it is not as nice as it is now. It was, you know, lumpy floors. We had folding chairs, and it was so jam-packed in there, like your knees were pressed up against the chair in front of you. And I was surrounded by homeless people. And Matthew was 22 at this point, and he's leading the service from the stage. And he says, as soon as, before you're seated, turn to the person next to you and say hello. And as soon as he said that, he jumped off the stage, came to me, and said, "Hi, I'm Matthew. Do you want to go out tomorrow night?" So,
scandalous.
Scandalous, yeah. Well, so it was only my second time here. So, and as you see now, the property's huge. So I was waiting by the cafeteria the next night. He was waiting on another parking lot. We both waited about 30 minutes. And this is pre-cell phones, right? So so we were both waiting about 30 minutes, thought the other one didn't show up, and said nothing about that missed date for 2.5 years. I was on one of those hyper-spiritual kicks, you know, where I thought, okay, God, you've protected me because I'm not supposed to date him, but you've called me here for life, and it'd be really weird if I dated the pastor. So it wasn't until 2.5 years later that he asked me out again.
So you both thought that the other one stood the other one, stood
yes.
you up.
Yes, exactly.
And
yeah.
2.5 years later, you end up on a date and you're married.
I think we're just too busy to assess, you know, throwing water out of the boat of this big old dream center. Like, right. We're like, oh, it wasn't meant to be. We just kind of moved on. It was just so matter of fact in so many ways. But, but.
And without going into the details of the story, but I mean, so your father, the great Tommy Barnett, the
yeah.
pastor, was pastoring in Arizona.
Yes.
And tell us about acquiring this property, kind of that process.
It's incredible because my father, you know, he was in Phoenix and getting ready for his big pastor's conference. And one of the leaders from some of his God denomination said, well, there's a building and it's in downtown LA and it is really, we're going to lose it. It's one of the iconic buildings that came out, the old Bethel Temple, and it's going to go to the banks. Can you save it? And my dad just kind of said yes on a whim, not even really understanding what that meant. And so when he came to L.A., he invited pastors and said, would you help me plant this church? And I was 20-year-old kid sitting in the back seat, and we were driving around and looking at buildings and property and look at our site back then. And then my dad said, would you guys like to pastor? And every one of these guys, when they saw the neighborhood, they said, we don't feel led of the Holy Spirit to come and pastor here. So my dad asked me to come to pastor for 3 months. I was only supposed to be here for 3 months until he found a real pastor. It's 30 years later, and we're still looking for the real pastor. But it's the city touched my heart. You know, 3 months became 6 months, and then I realized that sometimes the greatest thing you could ever have is God's audible is better than man's plans. And that was God's audible for us. And we just started using what we had, loving what we had. We had that little church building, Bethel Temple. In the back, we had dirt lots. We turned them into weight piles for gang members to lift weights. And we would like put our desk on the sidewalk, and all the mamas would walk their kids to school, and we'd give away bags of food. We moved it on the sidewalk, and so it just we really just learned to understand that serving is not a destination where you finally have a great building and you could do something. It's a condition of your heart. It's just loving every little thing that God put in our hand to use, and that's I think what's kept us going for 30 years.
Amazing. And so just so people know, so the building we're sitting in right now is called the Dream Center, and we're on way up high, somewhere around the 15th floor. And then down the street is the Angelus Temple, which is the church.
Yes.
Which is where, and you preach there, and you pastor there together. So that's something people can come see that it's a church.
Yeah.
And so tell us what goes on, what happens there on Sunday.
Well, we have three. We have really kind of three iconic landmarks we've been a part of: the Bethel Temple, and then when we moved to the Queen of Angels Hospital, and we saw this building for sale, and through a series of miracles, we bought it for $3.9 million when they could have sold it for $16 million. Catholic Church turned it over to us, and then we thought we'll never have a church building because it's a hospital. And then we started using our little gym and helping a few hundred people, and then the Four Square Church, Pastor Jack Hayford and those involved, came to us and said, "We'd love to turn Angels Temple over to you." So you guys have a church building. So we started reaching the people that nobody wanted, trying to help people and God gave us a building bigger than anything we could have found scouting it out.
Right.
And, the iconic Angelus Temple with Amy Simple McPherson, who founded it in the 1920s, who built a hole in the ground, one of the great, you know, iconic features in the body of Christ. And now, you know, before her son passed away, turned it over to us and said, "I feel the mantle is safe now. Before I go to heaven and turn it over to you." So kind of this little square region of like 2 miles of all these iconic places that God has just blessed us with. And I know that with Angelus Temple, it's quite iconic being in that building every week.
So amazing.
And we have churches there on Sunday and Thursday. And then we do all the rehab and recovery and all the craziness of 24/7 ministry go on at the Dream Center every day.
What's your favorite part about this? What gets you up in the morning? What excites you about this?
I will say what's kept me going now, so I've been a part of it for 28 years, the stories never get old.
Yeah.
Seeing, you can almost see where someone's at in the program based on the way they're carrying themselves. You know, when they first come in, they're kind of sunken in like this, looking down, but each month you can see their chin come up and then they start making eye contact and smiling. And I would say with every testimony I've heard, I've never thought, you know, why'd you make those mistakes? I always think, no wonder. No wonder you chose drugs to numb, or no wonder right. you made the choices that you made.
Right.
And so the stories, they never get old for me.
Seeing that guy down there, or up there, wherever, with the scars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From trying to mm-hmm. kill himself.
Yeah.
And he shows us the scars. Yeah. And then here he looks like a new person. He's looking in the eye and talking about the hope he has.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, I don't know. If that doesn't light your fire, your wood's wet.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. Right.
Like, exactly. This is life transforming stuff yeah. that you get to see every day.
Yeah.
By the power of God.
Yeah.
You were talking up on the roof. You said something. Calling keeps you. I mean, speaking of staying,
yeah.
outlasting, the winds and the waves, the culture, that you know, it's the calling that keeps you, isn't it?
It really is. You know, we've been here for 3 decades, and there's times that we've wanted to quit. Matter of fact, there's several times I got in my car and I drove down the 10 freeway and I was going to go back to Arizona and throw in the towel.
Really?
And then I saw Dairy Queen and stopped there and got a blizzard and thought about quitting. And God just said,
better.
Just give me Dairy Queen, save my ministry.
Yeah.
But God just said, you know what, give me 24 more hours. Give me 24 more hours. And I think a lot of times people quit because they feel like, oh, I don't have vision for 10 years or 5 years. I don't have a vision for one more day. But sometimes that's okay. That's okay to be in a place where you just need to get to that new mercy every single morning to find. So we've survived 3 decades of what has just felt like a lifetime. Even last week, you know, at the storm shelter, bringing in 110 extra bodies. And I turned to our team, I said, we just lived a lifetime in a week, didn't we? You know, but it is the call of God that keeps you up when you don't feel the burden. And maybe you don't love the way you should love, but it's a call that keeps you going. And so I think that's the big thing that's here that's, you know, stopped us from selling this amazing 400,000 square foot asset and giving it back. You know, it's putting deeper roots in the ground during hard times. And when everyone's given up in LA, we just go deeper into the foundation to try to rescue more. And so I think that's really been a key secret to us, is just understanding that you won't always feel it, but the call of God will allow you to stay in it. And then you'll start feeling it sometimes. You'll be like, oh, you get reminded. But, you
sometimes
know,
the marriage can be like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the miracle is always in the next step that you think you can't take.
Yeah.
And then we've just outlasted everything. We've outlasted the pimps. We've outlasted gang members, OGs in the neighborhood. We've outlasted liquor stores. Everything that's negative, the one thing that's remained has been the church. I think that's a great testimony yeah. to the community that we're staying and not leaving.
Rock of Ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the that's an interesting thought in terms of God, that time is actually on our side.
That's right.
When you think about it, which I think sometimes, and just this is so wonderful what you're doing, because what I see here is the tendency, I think, sometimes in organized religion can be to curse the darkness,
yes.
curse the culture. Be angry,
yeah.
be mad about everything. Look what they're doing. Look what they're
mm-hmm.
You guys are just lighting a candle and like pouring kerosene on it. I mean, like you're just saying, no, we're just going to keep shining brighter
mm-hmm.
and brighter. And I mean, that which widows and orphans, that's pure religion to begin with.
Right.
And I told our people at church last week, I said, don't ever say to your kids, I wish you were born in my era, or our era was yeah. better. We didn't have all the stuff that you have and right. all these negative things. You know, when it gets darker and darker, the light just gets brighter and brighter. So tell your kids you were born in the greatest hour, that God must really love you to have you be born in this strategic time. And so, you know, we've never had a victim mentality in downtown LA where we've got to the place where we're the only one who cares or no one else is doing this. Our mindset has always been everybody cares. The person who comes in for one day cares. So it gets out of that mindset of just kind of like, you know, that martyrdom kind right. of mentality. We get to do everything. So we get to serve is our motto. We don't have to, we get to, you know. Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. And so I think that's kind of what's bringing in 6,000 young people a year to serve here. It's not like we're going to show you how outreach is done. It's just like letting them jump in with their own unique expression and reach people.
And just kind of getting away from that mindset of nobody cares, because if you think that nobody cares, guess what? You surround yourself with nobody cares. So we just believe that we just project hope as much as possible. And we're not trying to relate to the neighborhood. You know, we're not trying to be relevant. We're trying to be revolutionary.
Right.
And that's what we really hope to do.
Not trying to be relevant, trying to be revolutionary. That's so good. Mm-hmm. That's so good. I think that's refreshing. Not a martyrdom. And it doesn't seem like there's a hook. Like sometimes when people are doing something, here comes the hook.
Yes.
Right? I don't sense a hook. This is just kind of like, this is what we do. You want a hot meal? Come. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's love.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is also refreshing. I mean, that's a magnetic thing. How do you make it through the hard times? Like, I'm thinking about this for a second. 28 years. I know I've been through stuff, and especially when I started getting involved with this. When I was at the Wall Street firm, I didn't have any problems, really. Then I got into this work, and I was like, I went home early. I'm like, I'm depressed. Like, I got attacked a lot. You probably relate to that.
Sure.
How have you dealt with it over these many years?
That's a good question. Definitely, it's gone through seasons where it's easier than other times. And obviously, I couldn't do without God and relying on Him. But even there's been seasons where I felt like, hey, God, where are you? You know? And then that's where your faith has to just step in and, on your knees a lot. I read a lot of books to try to help me get through seasons and always learning. I've been just amazed how God sustained us for all these years. And like Matthew said, you know, right when we need it, a miracle shows up, and it just gives us enough energy to keep going. So that's how, yeah.
That's amazing.
And I think a track record, too, of God's blessings, the landmarks, you can look back and say, I've been through this, I've been through that.
Altars.
And then you start realizing it really is God's ministry, and He loves the people that you're trying to serve more than you do.
Yes.
And so He's going to come through one way or another, so, you know, and that's been the beauty and the joy of just seeing these unexpected miracles show up. It's kind of like Papa Mueller in the old, how he'd pray for a miracle in the orphanages on Friday.
He never asked for money.
No, he didn't. He's better than us.
No. But, that's a goal.
But, you know,
God
it's,
just did it.
He just showed up. And that's what we've seen so many times, is God just showing up. And you know, people coming out under the bridges from fentanyl, they're showing up every day from all this horrible addiction. And the first thing that we say to people when they come into our rehab program is, what is your dream? And that freaks people out, because they're like, how in the world could I ever think about dreaming when I burned every bridge? But the Bible says that where there's no revelation, people cast off restraint, which means they have no reason to have self-control. And there's nothing great to live for. So I think many times in recovery, we immediately try to deal, why did you do what you do? You know, why did you make that mistake? But what we try to do is infuse them with hope immediately, because they can see a bright light ahead of them in the middle of dark and despair. They'll have something to walk towards and live towards in the future. And so,
you said it, their heads go from down to here to here to eye contact. Mm-hmm. It's like probably seeing like somebody, a human being, come alive.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bright eyes.
Yeah.
Again. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it that gives me chills. I mean, I want to hug all those guys in line. I literally want to hug them all. Like the beauty of that humility. To put every day, and that you're bunking, and you are at, you know, the beauty of that is...
it's raw.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, I just feel like everybody needs this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're all dealing with something,
right.
You know? And just the humility of that is so refreshing. Not hiding anything, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we've torn down the walls of shame and regret. I mean, those are the two things that stop people from really growing, is that shame and regret. And so when you start breaking down those walls, and they get around people like yourself who come in, just pour into them and speak to them, and they have people from different backgrounds and way of life, and who've been through it and been to the other side, it's a beautiful experience. They don't feel alone. They feel loved on. And like one guy said, dude, that guy came all the way from Santa Barbara. I'm like, he goes, that's intense, you know. But he just felt loved. You know, he felt loved,
good.
That you would just take the time to do this. And so I think our people do feel greatly loved, and there's power in that.
How do these guys and gals come back? Do they come back and see you?
Oh, yeah. We have an alumni. They connect through an alumni when they graduate, and their connection. They get connected to churches within our friendships all over the country. Everywhere I speak in America, it's like, hey, I went through your program. And then, you know, there's some that will go through the program and they won't graduate, but they'll come back a second time and graduate, reapply in 30 days, knowing that, you know, it's sometimes it takes them a couple times to get through the end of the program. Right. And but, you know, people ask us a question, and I'm not trying to be like really cute with the answer. And the answer is probably close to about 70% of how many people graduate from the time they come in from the beginning till the end. But I always say that it's 100% success rate, because the word of God never returns void.
Right.
It's always doing something in someone's heart and life.
Right. Whether we see it or not.
Whether we see it or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. You're going to see a lot in heaven.
Yes.
Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Good grief. The treasures, you know, that's a beautiful thing. Do you ever get, we already talked about getting tired. Do you ever think about not being here? Does that ever cross your mind?
You know, when I was dealing with the stroke in about 18 months ago, and I just had a random stroke out of nowhere, just couldn't talk, couldn't speak, and I was in the hospital. And when you're going through stroke recovery, it takes a lot of your confidence away a little bit. You know, you go through a time where you you start thinking everything is related to it. You know, you get dizzy, you're tired. And so it's just a big struggle. And during that time, though, what was so cool is people in our church said, Pastor, we got you. We had people stepping up like never before. They said, you just get well, and we want you to be in a good position. And so, but that was a great testing of my life, because it felt like, man, you know, when you go through physical stuff, you start doubting yourself, and then you start thinking other people have stopped believing in you as well, you know, and there's all these lies of the enemy that just keep, you know, running their course. But that was probably the biggest testing of my life. But now it's like, I feel more energized than ever before, but there was a real, real battle of, you know, I think many times a lot of us think to ourselves, we say to God, it's been a good run, right, God? You know, like, it's been good. Yeah, if it all ended today, it would have been a great run. But what I love about God is he'll oftentimes meet you at your rationale, even though it's not perfect, or even though you're not thinking clearly. He'll meet you in love at that place of rationale, and he'll just work with you. Don't just give me one more day. Just hang in there a little bit longer. And I found that God's met me at my strongest moments. He's also met me at my weakest moments and just kind of worked with me through that process as well.
So good. Yeah, that's true. I've been at a point where you said some things where I'm kind of like my prayer, which is usually when I hit the pillow, it's not out loud. It's just in my own head. Oftentimes my wife's already asleep, but recently it's somewhat like, God, I'm out of ideas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which it's I totally think relatable. Might like that. But if I didn't turn to him, it'd be like my sons. You're not, if you got a dad that has, you know, this and this and this and this, if you're not asking him, it's kind of like you're not really tapping into your resources.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I imagine that, and for sometimes achievers or type A, we want to work it all, work it, work it, work it. But I think he probably likes it when we get to the point where we're like, okay, I'm out of ideas, you know, you got this. I mean, you know, which is actually a refreshingly good place to be, even though we never want to get there.
No, and I don't care, like, to add to this too. Like, we always say that God doesn't destroy people in rock bottom, he recreates them. And sometimes you're being recreated when you're out of ideas.
Yes.
It's like God's allowed, he has something so fresh and raw to work with. Mm-hmm. You start dreaming dreams you never knew that you have, because you're dreaming from God's heart. And I think that's happened a lot here too.
Yeah. It's the dream center.
Yeah.
Dream center. It's a dream. I mean,
yep.
God dreams. You know, when I think I was listening to
so good.
Remember Whitley Phipps? Remember that name?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was talking about that, you know, God dreams for people. And I was thinking about, man, what a
so true.
What a great first question to ask people when they come in here. What's your dream?
Yeah.
You know, starting there. Powerful. You guys, this has been such an honor. Seriously, I really admire everything about this. And I thank you for taking us in.
Yeah.
We got our little squad here, and we'd love to stay in touch and just continue to you know, root for and support however we can. So,
thank you.
Thanks for telling the story.
Thank you.
Great to meet you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.